Welcome to Distant Voices, a podcast presented by Willamette Week. Join us every Tuesday to hear a member of the Willamette Week newsroom talk to Portlanders about how they are overcoming the pandemic. Come back on Saturdays to listen to Dive, a podcast hosted by me, Hank Sanders, that takes a look at the Willamette Week cover story. You can enjoy more episodes of these podcasts on this channel and learn more about our work at wweek.com. Enjoy this episode of Distant Voices.
So this is Tess Risky with Willamette Week, and we're joined by Hannah Ahern, who is going to talk to us about the lawsuit that was filed yesterday, I believe, in federal court relating to PPB officer Eric Kammerer. So thank you for joining me, Hannah. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I definitely appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, for sure. So I think just to start at the beginning, it would be great if you could kind of walk me through what happened on August 17th, 2019, you know, what you were doing when you were walking near the protest, why you were there, just sort of like the general lay of the land.
Yeah. So, I mean, I had just got off work. I was working at a restaurant downtown. I knew because it was like highly anticipated, you know, there was like flyers going out online that it was going to be a pretty like heavy presence of Proud Boys in Portland, Oregon. They were like, you know, on Twitter, it was like, people are coming from out of town. People are like packing up their vans and like, you know, just like coming out here. So I was like, God, it's going to be clearly got to be something intense. And so of course, like naturally, when I got off work, I was like, I want to check it out. Cause I walked downtown to like take my bus anyways, when I was living out in Tigard. And so I like, yeah, that's exactly what I did. I was a hostess, which is why I was wearing a dress and high heels, and like had just got off. But we closed our restaurant early because all of the anticipation, and you know, we had quite a few like folks of color that worked at my restaurant, and like just of all different backgrounds that weren't feeling super safe and secure being downtown at that time. And I was like, you know, we talked with my boss. He was like, yeah, you guys should just go home early, you know, before it got to the night shift kind of thing. So I walked downtown to the waterfront, and, you know, I just see like a lot of people. It feels so like redundant going through it sometimes. I'm like, I saw a lot of people. They were kind of like marching towards like the kind of inner city at that point, like rounding around from the waterfront coming up into the city. So I follow them naturally. And that's when I stopped on, I think, Oak and Third. Juan, correct me if I'm wrong. I can't even remember. Oak and Third or Oak and Second, something on Oak. There was this girl that was being tackled across the street. So I like take out my phone, because everybody takes out their phone. We're like, we, you know, want to make sure that this is recorded. I'm like way too short and at the back of the like group, kind of the gaggle of people that are also recording, and so I'm like standing on my tiptoes like trying to get a video, but I can't really see anything. So I was like, like it wasn't, you know, I just kind of gave up. Like I was like, I'm not gonna get probably a better shot than this, and again, I'm in high heels and whatever. So I, and the also the police officers behind me were like telling us, this is an unlawful assembly, you know you need to get out of the way, like get out, cross the street, find a sidewalk, whatever. So I turn around, I go back up Oak, and that's when like this, you know, a truck full of people that look like they're about to like withstand the last civil war, like come rolling through the intersection. I'm like, God, that's just ridiculous. It's like, this is serve and protect. Okay. But I remember just, you know, like feeling grossed out. So I spit on the ground, and then I saw some dude like point at me, and then it was like, it happened very quick. It was like these bike cops, they like dropped their bikes in such a weird fashion. I had literally no idea that they were like gonna be coming to me until like I felt people like hands on me, and I was like, there's no fucking way, like I haven't, excuse me, there's no way, like I haven't done anything, like, you know, like I was just like crossing the street.
And what was going through your head when that happened, when all of these cops with bikes are surrounding you? And also, do you know how many there were about?
No, there was, it was so chaotic. Honestly, it was like absolute chaos. I know that there was two people on the side of me, one person behind me, and then they're just all yelling different things. Like I was like, I didn't, I mean, again, it took me like a second. I'm sure I was like, what? And like, you know, it took me a second to understand that I was being arrested. Somebody's like, one of the officers, this woman was like taking my bag. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, what's going on? And then they like, somebody like kicked my knee in or something. And, you know, I don't remember like their technicalities of how they take people down or whatever for arrest. But I do remember there was this officer Yu, that, which he confirmed to me after, with like, clearly in his eyes, he knew that he made a mistake, because he like kneed me in the back of the head really hard, but I like ricocheted off of concrete. And so I like smacked my head. And when I got, like, when they finally pulled me up and in handcuffs and everything, like, I was furious, because I was like, why would you do that? Like, I was complying. I, you know, that was absolutely unnecessary. And I looked at him and I was like, was it you who kicked me in the, like, who kneed me in the back of the head? And he said, like, that was me. And I was like, okay, officer, you, like, Y-O-O, that's okay. Like, I was like, why did you feel that that was necessary? You know, like, I wasn't resisting you at all. Like, there was no need for that. And it was just excessively like violent, in my opinion. And they're also like, again, I was in a dress and my like, I wasn't planning to be thrown around in the middle of a street in front of like a gaggle of people. Like, that was really embarrassing. I was like super flustered. I was super flustered. And like, I remember just like shaking, because I was like, oh, like, yeah, my undies are going to be everywhere on the internet.
Right.
So like, you know, just like that. And not that that's like my immediate worry. I was just like, all of it. Like, I was like, it just didn't process to me in the moment. Like, I was like, I, you know, if I'm being, and once it clicked, like, okay, well, I spit, but like, that can't be, you know, like, I didn't spit on anyone. I didn't spit at anyone. I spit on the ground. And that's very clear. And I know that there are a lot of cameras around me, and I know that somebody got that, which they did.
And Hannah, I'm wondering, from your perspective, you know, this was, I guess, a year and a half ago now. I'm wondering if, you know, to this day, if you feel still like affected by this incident, or if you have any kind of, I don't know, if it's had an impact on you that you're still aware of, you know, now in 2021.
I mean, no, because honestly, in lieu, in the climate of everything that is happening, and especially like in the very necessary like uprisal of the Black Lives Matter movement and like things that are happening in our Asian communities, it's like, I don't think that, to me, you know, there are bigger things. Like, I understand that that was like, that's something that happened to me, and it was like traumatic. Like, I like had bruises and was like, you know, shaking. Like, I was like nervous and scared, but I've always like not really cared for cops, so it didn't really change anything. It kind of just added to that, if anything. Like, I was like, yeah, I mean, I never saw a reason for them anyways, so this is just like going in my file of, you know, reasons. So I think, and in this, in 2021, a lot more has happened than this arrest. It doesn't like weigh on me heavily all the time, but it is something where I'm like, you know, I think about it and I'm like, wow, that actually happened. Like, what the hell? that was really like, what a weird day.
Hi there, my name is Shannon, and I'm Willamette Week's music and visual arts editor. I'm here today with Jimmy Byron, who is McMiniman's music director. McMiniman's was one of over 40 venues here in Oregon that signed a letter to Kate Brown earlier this month, urging for industry-specific reopening guidelines for the live events industry. Jimmy, how's it going today?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm all right. Thanks for taking the time to talk to me.
You bet. My pleasure.
So to start off, any updates from the governor's office about the issues brought up in the letter?
Nothing specific. We've had some email exchanges to try to get clarification on the current low risk. I'm still a little bit confused on the guidance, because they talk about in low risk outdoor venues, can operate at 50% capacity. And there's a guidance overlay, and I'm not exactly sure, I'm still trying to get clarity if that's to social gatherings or if it's to restaurant rules. The real question is it 50% capacity or is it 50% capacity? However, it needs to be in pods and groups. And if so, what's the distance between the groups? How many people are the max number of people that can be in a pod or a group? And because that will really determine what we're able to do for our capacity.
Right. So what's the scenario that would work best for, say, Edgefield right now?
Great. The scenario that would work best for Edgefield is the scenario that works best for everybody across the country. And that is at a set time, whether that's 30 days or 45 days after the vaccine is available to anyone that wants it, that there should be no more capacity restrictions. At that point, it becomes an individual choice, and it shouldn't be a roadblock to business. Now, if there are requirements, hygiene or mask wearing or things like that, you know, that would make sense. But at the point that everybody is essentially vaccinated, there's no more reason to have anything closed, in my opinion.
So are you considering at all anything like, say, what the Waterfront Blues Festival is doing, like with those little pods that people are going to have to be in?
No, I've spoken to them. They're great. And they're going to have a great event. Waterfront Blues Festival is going to be excellent this year, although a little bit different. But we can't really, at a capacity of 300, there's no way to really do the type of events or type of artists that we traditionally would bring to Edgefield.
I did want to talk about the capacity issue a little bit, because that also applies to club venues, where some smaller club venues have reopened at 25% capacity. But why wouldn't that work for, say, the Crystal Ballroom?
Well, again, if we had, I don't want to sound like I'm complaining. I'm just if we had specific guidance that told us how to do it, that might be something that we could consider. We had correspondence with the governor's office earlier in November asking about, you know, will we be looking at a pod model or would we be looking at a vaccine passport or any of those type of type of scenarios that are playing out across the country. And we were told no, that there wouldn't be any proposals, wouldn't be considered, and that it's simply following the guidelines as they are currently written or amended to be, which is low risk, 50% capacity, and then those questions that I had, that I still have, yeah.
So now that people are getting vaccinated, do you have any plans yet on how you're going to be handling the extreme backlog of postponed shows?
Yeah, good. That's a great question, Shannon. Optimistic that we're open in the fall. And now I'm shifting from Edgefield to Crystal Ballroom. We are booked every single day. And so there will be days that there will be two concerts in the same day. And we work with bands directly. We also work with a bunch of different renters and promoters. And so it's kind of hard to get one promoter to work with a different promoter and a different agent. And so that's not easy to pull off. But if both of the shows are shows that we're producing, or both of the shows are, for example, a Live Nation show, they can do both in one day. And so we call that double stacking. We'll be doing that quite a bit. And we expect to be really busy when we're open. The caveat is, what is the audience, what's the audience's bandwidth for it? We know that people are excited to go out. If I have 10 shows in a week, I don't know that there's enough audience to support it. But there's definitely, the shows will definitely be there.
So one of the difficulties with reopening venues, it seems like, I mean, so with restaurants, it's been super stop start all year, which is hard enough for restaurants, but even more difficult for venues when there's a lot more moving parts and you have to plan way in advance. So what happens if, you know, hopefully the vaccine rollout goes great, but what happens if there isn't a point over, you know, this summer when health officials can confidently say, yes, you can reopen and you won't have to reclose due to a spike or whatever?
Yeah, we just have to cancel. We have to roll with whatever those regulations are. We're taking the President of the United States's word that 4th of July things should be relatively normal. We're forecasting out a little bit beyond that and looking to mid to late July. Many of the other outdoor venues in the state are doing the same thing, and expecting that we will be able to open then, in spite of the lack of specific guidance at this point. To be fair to the state, they have replied to us, they have responded, they did have meetings with us, and they have continually updated the guidance. So it's just that we don't have the specific guidance that we need, like they just put out in California, where essentially 45 days after the vaccine is available, 30 to 45 days after the vaccine is available, California is open. That puts us in a difficult spot because Oregon's worked really hard. And, you know, Music Fest was a really excellent example of all of the city of Portland coming together, all the different promoters coming together, and really saying to the music industry on a national and international level, Portland is a great place to stop. Oregon is a wonderful state to perform in. And we've been working really, really hard. And now we find ourselves in a position where all of our neighboring states are able to announce and have shows, and bands are skipping Portland and they're skipping Oregon. And this has already started. Many events are canceled. Many events aren't going to happen in the same way already. And many bands are telling us, you know, we aren't confident. And so we're skipping, and we are afraid that that will affect our entertainment industry for many years to come.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Distant Voices. Thank you to everyone who was a part of this episode, including the guests and Willamette Week Newsroom. Also, special thank you to AmpMusic.co and Heather Witte for the music that you heard on this podcast. For more great content, be sure to follow Dive by Willamette Week on all podcast platforms, join us Saturdays for our Dive podcast show, and follow along with Willamette Week's content at WWeek.com and on all social platforms. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.